Virginia, on track to hit about 7,000 barrels this year. Been open about 2.5 years. I guess some of my questions are just covered, but another one I had was about good comp data. I mean, the industry's growing so fast, and talent is becoming more and more limited compared to the number of job openings. So, yeah, how do you come up with good ways to value each position and the tiers for progression, both when you're hiring and for promotions and things like that? Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good one. We just spent a year doing a comp survey, our HR that was headed by our HR department, and we looked at all kinds of breweries from different size to levels to comparing it with our size and level, as well as other businesses, manufacturing businesses that are similar in size. And it was actually not one survey, it was a few different surveys, and I think there was a consultant involved as well, yeah, to try to get, I mean, it took a year, right? But we wanted to get some good data. And cost of living, you know, San Diego is not a cheap place to live, so that's an important thing to kind of factor in. So we got all this data, and we actually restructured our whole pay scale. And when we showed it to every employee and said, this is where you're at. This is, you know, the kind of the industry. Here's your range that you're at. And we created grades, too, job grades. So kind of like the military where you have numbering systems. So it's like you're an assistant brewer, so you're a grade 5. And here's what is involved in your job and the kind of the skill sets that are required. If you want to get to a 6 or a 7 or a 9 or a 10 or a 14, here's what you need. And we actually have a pretty comprehensive training program as well, and we're tying that in to this grade level. And just trying to be able to show people on a piece of paper that this is where you are and this is where you can go.
Anybody else want to? You know, I'll add something here. I think there are a lot of resources out here for comp survey type stuff. And one of the things in our HR department was doing a lot of that, but one thing that wasn't really being factored into their work over several years was the cost of living in Southern California, and also the fact that there's a lot of high-tech pharmaceutical industry in Southern California that can pay a heck of a lot more than a brewery can pay, and these people have similar skill sets and transferable skills. So, you know, I think the work that we did bringing in the consultant opened our eyes a lot. We were seriously underpaying our people, and to the company's credit, we made immediate adjustments for some of them, and then worked some other adjustments in over time for the rest. And I think you know that it was a real important thing for us to do. It was very painful, you know, and we'd been getting a lot of feedback from people that left that we just weren't paying enough money, you know, and. And in my opinion, you get money off the table, then you can really focus on careers. But if money's the first thing on the table, you're kind of screwed. And so you got to get that taken care of. All right.
I think he was the first.
Oh, okay.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Dan Whiteleaf. I'm the director of operations for Half Acre Beer Company in Chicago. We're going to do about 33,000 barrels this year. And 2 years ago, we did 14,000 barrels. So it's been a pretty dramatic growth in the last couple of years. And Andy, you mentioned that, you know, all of us in this room kind of come to this industry with an entrepreneurial spirit, and that's true for a lot of our employees, you know, and guys who a couple of years ago worked their way up from packaging to be brewers are now brewers in a, just a very different way. You know, it's a much more automated system. And so I wonder how to, you know, you've got people who have worked there. How do you keep them engaged now that their job is in many ways a lot simpler? We're a lot more spread out. We're brewing 6 days a week now. And how do you keep everybody to feel like they are part of the whole and not just a cog in the system?
I love that question. I think that that's something that, I mean, we must all kind of face some of that at some level, especially from like a hiring and onboarding type of thing. You know, a lot of the brewers that interview and eventually come to work at New Belgium, they come from breweries that are, you know, smaller, and the scope and the breadth of that work is a lot different than you know, why they got into the brewing industry in the first place in a lot of times. You know, that's just kind of the fact of the matter. It's automated. It's 24/7. Your craft is going to be different. And so I think our challenge is to kind of put opportunities that are interesting to people in front of them, right? So if I give you a lot of opportunities to do something that you really aren't that interested in doing, then it doesn't really help us as a team. So if I'm focused on you as a brewer and you have got interest in separation and centrifuge systems, or if you're interested in microbiology and yeast and fermentation, it's really trying to find those motivating things that can help you kind of gain expertise in the things that you're most passionate about, because you're not going to be developing recipes and mashing in and like doing everything that you did before you joined our team. And it's hard. I think that it's something that we have to really actively engage people in, because if you come from that place where you are the man and you are doing everything, it is, it's a shift of your own focus to try to figure out what you really want to do and where you want to focus your energy. And to balance that with kind of the needs of the team is something that takes a lot of active engagement.
Yeah, I think being really honest in the interview process too, where you say, hey, this is a shift brewery, so it's going to be hard work, a lot of the same kind of work, 24/7. And, you know, obviously you need to provide creative outlets, but that's a part of the interview process that I'm always make sure that I discuss fully with them and that they understand that, yeah, you know, there will be creative opportunities, but it is shift brewing, and just make sure everybody's on kind of the same page, that is part of the gig.
You know, in continual training, whether it's recipe formulation, training guys on how to do inventory, raw materials, kind of keeps more people engaged, so then you have more people involved with, you know, the process of running a brewery. There's a lot of that wheels that have to turn, and to have multiple people cross-trained on, you know, inventory control, the records management system, how to troubleshoot that, brew pubs. Recipes, keeping track of all the recipes, make sure they're up to date, or even just management training for guys, or sending them to, you know, a couple classes on pumps and pump seals, keeps them engaged, keeps their training up, keeps valued employees for you in-house, and keeps everybody, you know, in the process of continually learning different aspects of you know, a working, running brewery. So I think, you know, more of the training, continual training with guys is real key. It's gonna help you.
Cool. Tom?
Hey there, I'm Tom Dargan from Craftworks Restaurants and Breweries, which is all the Rock Bottoms and Gordon Biersch's. So I have a unique situation where we do about 60,000 barrels, but it's in about 60-some individual breweries. And so our review process is really complex in that those reviews are being done by regional brewers, and so they all have their own sort of separate views on things and expectations, and we have to work with our HR department, who is primarily focused on, you know, the restaurant management group, and so we're kind of this weird offshoot, and I have to generate my own forms and whatnot, but we still have to fit it back into their system, which a component of that is a force ranking system, which is really onerous, and the brewers and myself kind of disdain it greatly, but that's sort of where our ownership is a little backward, I think, in that regard. And one of the things that we did just this last year, we thought it would be a good retention tool, we expanded the ranges. So a lot of people that would have been capped out before in their position now are not capped out, added a significant amount to, you know, what the high-end range is. Of course, unfortunately, everybody immediately thought that, oh, I just went from the high end of the range to the middle of the range, and there must be a lot more people making a bunch more money than I am because the top of the range. So I was wondering if you could speak some to, if you're willing, to the level of transparency and how you go about the review process so that people feel that it's supporting them and helping them along their career path rather than, you know, this sort of yearly angst-ridden, am I going to qualify or am I not going to qualify for the raise that I'd like to receive?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we do is have the brewers do self-evaluations. Pretty much everybody in our own whole company does it that way. And that coupled with mid-year reviews makes it more of a dialogue rather than coming to get a grade. So that, you know, our goal is that there's never any surprise. So they know where they are. And some of the earlier comments about what position they're in the company with, you know, maybe in a company with more levels, they know the range for that position. And to really advance, okay, I have to get a promotion and a responsibility increase. So we've remodeled our review form to target specific problems that we're seeing in that progress, in that process, almost annually. We put questions on there to solicit feedback about the review process from our team members. It got enormously big because it was done by probably about 10 different people over the years, right? So everybody added a question, but nobody removed it. And then last year, we're like, all right, this is like a giant monstrosity to manage and get everybody's done. So we actually shortened it to as few questions as possible, basically focusing on what's keeping you from doing your job better, cheaper, faster every day? What do you need help, right? We have, as an entrepreneurial organization, I think one of the worst things we've done is allow a vent for somebody to say, hey, I know this needs to be done, but I'm not getting it done. I need help. And that's relieved a lot of stress that it's okay to ask that question. So those kinds of things. What's keeping you from doing a better job? Because they wouldn't be there if they weren't already doing a pretty decent job. They wouldn't make it, you know.
I think along with, besides the review process too, even more important is to have one-on-one communication. So I do one-on-one meetings with all of my supervisors every 2 weeks. And then they, in turn, do monthly one-on-ones with all of the team. And then I also do one-on-ones every quarter with the entire team. And so we're talking, you know, 43 people. But I think, you know, that way you keep the communication going. And instead of just once a year, you know, the review process is where you have your communication. I think it's really important to always have, you know, avenues for more communications. And we do monthly communication meetings for just brewing as well. And Mitch does something where he does this thing that he calls have a beer with me, and he'll talk about new beers. So I think all those avenues are important for keeping continual communication so that when you get to the review, it's not really that big a deal because you've already, you know, amassed all this information about everybody.
Okay. All right, and I think... In the last few years, we've seen... My name is Campbell Morrissey. I'm with Mother Road Brewing Company in Flagstaff, Arizona. We'll do about 4,000 barrels this year and hoping to get a new facility online next summer. So we're about to go through another big boom of hiring. In the last few years, I've seen just an unbelievable amount of brewing schools open up, everything from major research universities to liberal arts colleges to community colleges. And I just wanted to know some strategies for vetting those different programs and trying to figure out what people may have gotten out of that. Personally, I got my master's at Harriet Watt, so I can speak to that one, but, you know, that's going to be so different than, you know, a local community college that's doing a craft beer certificate. And so just trying to figure out, you know, what they may have learned, what they could bring, and are they really going to have a good skill set going in?
So we in San Diego, we have a brewing program. Actually, we have two at UCSD and also at San Diego State. And we're very involved. Mitch used to teach at it, and we have another guy that teaches one of the classes now. You know, we have an internship program with them. So we've developed that with them. We also do that with UC Davis. We actually have a few Harriet Watt guys as well. There's a lot of schools out there now. So we try to touch base with those schools, and I think the internship part of the program is really valuable, and it can lead to you actually hiring on people. So,
I'm part of the advisory committee for the UCSD Brewery Extension Program. So I was involved with the first meeting that they had on what classes or what things that we as the brewers in San Diego were looking for. to get brewers out of. They do have an apprenticeship program, which we get them for 6 weeks. We really get to see what a working brewery is. They have some really good classes on management and brewing process and so forth. And that we meet every year to go over any new items, any classes that don't feel are making the grade or that valuable. Just this year alone, we've come up with more sensory-type classes and more lab-type classes to teach the students more about the microbiology side of it, and that's helped. We get a lot. You know, I get an intern almost every quarter. It's good to see what they're learning because they have forms and sheets to fill out and stuff like that. So when you're trying to vet a certain brewing school, you know, they're very open to talking. They're very open to let you know what they teach and what classes they are and who's teaching them. So give them a call and find out, you know, what the students are learning, how they're learning it, who they're learning it from, and if it's worthwhile, if you think it's worthwhile. You can go a step further and try and get on the advisory committee or be a part and teach at it. I know a couple of our guys at our brewery teach a couple classes at those, I think a lab class and a management class. So we're kind of more involved. But it's good, and if you have other breweries in town that are involved with it, it's easy to reach out and find out, you know, how good that school is if you're getting quality candidates and quality students out of that school.
Yeah, just real quickly, Colorado State University has a small, young, kind of growing brewing school that they're kind of developing right now, and we've done a lot of the same type of thing. We send our brewers there to go and teach and to be a part of that classroom setting. And the other thing that we do is we give those guys our biggest problems. You know, we had a problem with our yeast pitching process, and you give that problem to these schools and you see how well they can tackle those problems. And I think not only does it give them a tremendous amount of satisfaction, it also gives them a lot of credibility with us and with our brewing community.
Okay.
Cool. Hi, I'm William Hartley. I'm from the UK. I'm head brewer at Wiper and True, based in Bristol. And we're at about 4,000 barrels at the moment, US, but we're growing pretty quickly. The rotational system you guys mentioned, I think it was Scott earlier, we're currently using that and it's working out really well at the moment. But we're growing pretty quickly and we're going to be recruiting quite a bit over the next year or two. And so my question kind of relates to that. I mean, it's really important to have passionate, inspired brewers. But where would each of you guys draw the line when it comes to the kind of ego involved there? Where do you start to see someone's maybe a little too passionate? if you know what I mean. Do you draw that line?
I mean, you know, that kind of leads to how well they're getting along with their coworkers, you know, and that can be corrosive to the team. So, you know, if you have somebody who's really talented but can't get along with anybody and help bring everybody else along, it usually doesn't work out very well. I mean, that's, you know.
I don't know. I think you emphasized that you are a team, you know, because whether you brewed the winning beer or not, you had help along the way. And there's really, you know, everybody works together for the common goal. Egos can get a little bit bigger here and there. But I think you focus on, you know, everybody's a team. The assistant cleaned the tank. Everybody helped. Everybody's part of this team. That's what's making our beer great. You know, and if you give that the little bit of ownership is, you know, it's our beer, it's not my beer. I think that kind of helps with some of the egos that, I mean, there's always going to be egos, but I think emphasizing that you guys are a team and you work as a team and therefore you get the, you know, spoils as a team.
Yeah, and I think going back to the interview process again, you know, try to vet those really early on, and as you are asking questions and getting answers, you know, if you see any of that kind of ego, don't hire them. Because it can be very corrosive. And so.
Yeah, to kind of go on that theme a little bit, I think we would always ask these questions like, why do you want to be a brewer at New Belgium? And then we kind of let people go on with that. But I think as we hired more people, we started asking a lot more specific questions to get to the heart of that, you know, to get to the heart of that. And so, you know, the things that we wanted to make sure we did was ask specific questions where people could talk about specific events or things that they did and the specific outcomes and the things that they learned or maybe the things that they would do differently. And I think that through targeting that way, you really get to find that authentic person, you know, and by moving away from general questions to very specific ones was really helpful for us.
I think you were next.
Hi, my name is Chloe Smith. I own a brewery on the Sunshine Coast in Canada, Townsite Brewery. We do less than 5,000 hectoliters. When I'm hiring for all the departments in our company, I like to throw a curveball and ask something like, what was the last beer you drank? Or tell me about your favorite beer. Not because I care, but because I want to see how they're going to handle something that they weren't expecting, which I really think is at the heart of our industry. And I'm just wondering if you have any techniques for hiring to vet the people that can handle the chaos.
Well, I think we tend to do walking interviews with a lot of our people, take them through the plant, see what kind of questions they ask, and what that usually leads to with everybody's schedules. No matter how you plan it out, there's people coming in and out of the interview. You know, so it's not like we all sit down and introduce ourselves. So that's one kind of curveball if people are kind of jumping in and jumping out. You know, that leads to it being atypical. You know, also ask them, a situation that didn't work out well for them and what they would do differently, right? So most people are always there talking about their success, prepared to talk about their successes, but also I think you learn more from when you fall flat on your face and you got to dust yourself off. So ask them, hey, what was your biggest, you know, mistake you made at your last job, and how did you move on from there? Because it's not whether you're going to make mistakes, it's when.
I think that's a really valuable point. We use that process as well, you know, and tell us about some areas that you think you need to improve in, you know, and you get some valuable information, and some of the answers can lead you on to other things too that can be pretty interesting.
I always ask people what kind of music they listen to. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I care. I just want to kind of gauge their passion level from other venues and whether they're more artistic or whether they're more technical, and that kind of helps you guide where they end up. So anyway, all right, you're next.
My name's Bill Seal. I work at a small nano brewery in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and regardless of the size of the operation that you're running, what have you found to be the best platform for advertising help wanted? Yeah. We need to hire somebody. What's the best sort of formats that you've used to get legitimate candidates coming to your doors?
Our website seems to be the best, like, for finding and people who are looking for our particular company. Some of the other, you know, pay sites are kind of hit or miss, but people are specifically really interested in your company are going to be cruising your website, you know. Maybe some you're already doing that, yeah. And that doesn't help you.
So. Some of the best candidates I've got are one for our website and two from some of the brewing school websites. We also post on, like, Indeed and places like that. The more valued candidates to me have come from the local brew schools. There's obviously a lot of them now. And then your own website. People are always, you know, searching websites and they go to the career spot or however work for. Like, we have a work for Carl section and they're always perusing those. And that's where we get the best candidates. Not that it's a bad idea to go to some of the other websites to get some more people who may be interested, but those are the websites and those are the places that I've found that have the better candidates that I've seen. And, you know, also our local guild has a website, and they always have careers on it. And we, you know, we find it through our local San Diego Brewers Guild. So those are some good avenues to get some good candidates.
I'd say listen to your people as well. Well, we've gotten a lot of good people just from internal recommendations. And we've also gotten a lot of good people just from other departments at Stone. Like the store, actually, we have five or six people that we've hired from the store. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of value in internal recommendations.
Okay. Hello. excuse me. Jeffrey Stuffings, Jester King Brewery in Austin, Texas. Last year we did about 1,700 barrels. One thing we've been looking at right now in terms of retention of our top brewing staff, and as well as in our tasting room and engineering departments, is some type of profit or revenue sharing. And I'm curious if you guys have explored that area at all, and if you found it to be an effective tool, and if so, any kind of tips for implementing some type of like a profit sharing thing for our kind of our core staff.
Yeah, you know, New Belgium is an employee-owned company. We have an ESOP. We also have a profit-sharing system in place, and it is across the board for everybody that works there, right? So if you hit the target, you get the profit-sharing, and then there's also like kind of a percentage. If you meet certain percentages of the target, then that kind of shifts, and it's always a capped at a certain percent of the payroll, and people are extremely motivated to get there. I mean, the last quarter of the year is always one where people are, you know, kind of watching that very, very closely, and people are more interested in, you know, what's going out the door maybe than they are other parts of the year. But in terms of, like, doing it for our brewers or, like, just smaller parts of the company, we haven't gone there from, like, a financial standpoint, but we are always trying to kind of set a game up where we're trying to meet these strategic goals. And I think that, you know, those kind of feed into that kind of bigger picture profit-sharing system that they have up.
We have a quarterly bonus program that we started last year, and so we have production goals, and we align those with this bonus program, and safety is part of it as well. So that's something that's been pretty successful, and people have buy-in because there's some financial impact.
My name is Joe Boers. I'm the director of brewery operations at Revolution in Chicago. We did 65,000 barrels last year, hoping to hit 100,000 this year. So we've done a significant amount of hiring. My question is specifically about references. Some people check references, some don't. Do you guys find them valuable? And if you do, what questions do you ask those guys to really pull accurate information out of them?
I found references really helpful if I actually call the person. You know, if our HR department calls, you get nothing, really. They worked here so long. Here was their position. Two things I find helpful is, number one, how fast the references call you back. You know, because typically you're leaving a message. So if this is typically a former coworker or colleague or something, right? And if they're calling you back the day you left a message, you know, they thought really highly of the person. And I mean, most of my questions are based around, you know, how will they work as a team member? Are they able to accomplish their goals? And I find you get better answers verbally because there's, you know, it's undocumented, right? So nobody feels like they have to CYA on it. But it takes a lot of legwork.
Hi, I'm Veronica Vega. I work for Deschutes Brewery, and we're at about the 380,000 barrel mark. So we staff 24/7, and I wondered if you could speak specific to night shift, and do you have a permanent night shift, and how you keep those brewers engaged, and retention rates and turnover within there, and I think most importantly, how are you getting good leadership on graveyard shifts?
That's an awesome question. That's so tough. So we're 24/7 as well. You know, typically we do rotations, but if somebody likes night shift, we usually allow them to stay on it. The problem there is, though, you don't want them to stay on it forever. because I think it's important to bring people to days, at least for a couple months. We're doing that with our supervisors right now for that exact reason, to make sure our leadership on those overnights is where we feel it needs to be. Yeah, but God, it's such a hard thing, you know. And we've talked about all kinds of different, you know, things like a 980 kind of deal. We looked at 410s, but it was just going to be too hard for the amount of staff that we would need. But I think those are, you know, valuable options to look at to see if there's some play there to make that 24/7 better.
Yeah, we've ended up rotating as well, just to sort of spread the fun to everybody.
Everyone equally dissatisfied.
Yeah. And same kind of thing. We have had people through for personal reasons. Like we had one guy whose mother was sick, and he worked nights for, I don't know, probably 6 or 9 months, so he could take his mom to the doctor. And that worked well. We're probably going to end up long-term doing some sort of differential around that. That's the biggest complaint we hear now. It really depends on how well people sleep during the day, right? When I work nights, I personally couldn't sleep during the day, so it was like a death march for me. But some of our folks do well with it and would rather go longer than a month, so we tried to rotate every month, which is hard swinging. There's no good way to do it. When we had to go seven days, we did two groups of 4-3s, you know, and basically they would end up, when one cycle ended, they'd have 7 days off in a row. So everybody liked that, you know. So there was an advantage there.
Yeah, we're in a 24/7 rotation also. It is one of the things I think that has the potential to impact our morale the most as a team. It's hard stretches working at night. And one of the things I think that we have gotten a little bit better at to make it easier is to just plan further out in advance and give people a chance to know when they're going to work and far enough out that they can make plans for themselves and their families. And it's one of the hardest challenges that we face, for sure.
Hi, my name is Brad Clark. I'm the Director of Brewing Operations at Jackie O's Pub and Brewery in Athens, Ohio. We did 8,200 barrels last year, probably do about 13 this year. Primarily, everybody's kind of homegrown. We haven't done any outside hiring with anybody that has any previous experience yet, and it's proved to work out fairly well. But I was wondering if there's any signifiers of when we might need to really look out and headhunt a little bit, or find somebody that has the specific set of skills, whether it's a barrelage number or certain operations that will come online in the near future.
I think that can go to training. If you think you're going to need a barrel guy, there's a lot of good barrel people out here who will be willing to talk and share their knowledge with barrels. There's also ways to keep training your staff and your up and coming staff on different aspects in your brewery to keep those qualified people there and keep the culture that you have, obviously, in your brewery. We are constantly training, and we're constantly cross-training, because we do a lot of hiring within. I think it's a really good way to keep your employees engaged, especially the ones that are at the lower level, and start moving them up. And there's always people who want to be part of it. So, you know, training and talking your fellow brewers and brewmasters that are doing barrel aging or are doing something that you may need in the future, so you can train your staff and keep that culture of continual advancement within your brewery, because I think that's important. I think that creates a real strong team, because you get guys that I have guys that started on the bottling line and moved all the way up to senior brewers, and those guys are great, and they've been engaged the whole time, and I think that's very valuable. So if you can keep that going, you may get to the point where you get too big, where you just don't have the staff to do it, and then you got to look outside, and that, you know, comes into everything that we talked about interviewing and making sure you get the right guys. But I think if you can keep training and keep those guys trained up and keep moving up, you'll have a stronger team and a stronger staff, and to keep that culture that you're that you've created at your brewery.
Thank you.
Once a month, we sit down, we review our staffing and our shifts and kind of like the load that that has and what we need. So I think the thing that I found has been important is to like continually review that process and what you need so that you're not like reactive to making that decision.
Blake Jarlin, Coop Ale Works, Oklahoma City, about 9,000 barrels last year. Of 14 or 15 employees that we have now, two of us have been there longer than 2 years. And so I kind of want you all's perspective on the history, like communicating the history of your company to the kind of new generation of employees. As we have worked in, you know, underserved facilities and are now in a much nicer one, it's kind of hard when you walk out the door at 3:30 one day, maybe to go to a meeting, maybe to go hang out with your kid, and they look at you and go, well, I'm still here and here till 5, you know, and you kind of have that disenfranchised feeling on the back of your neck. And so maybe just speak to that topic in general.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we're starting to focus a lot. We have been focusing, but even more now, on onboarding. I think that's critical when it comes to getting people in so they can know the story and the legacy. I would say involve your legacy people, so the people that have been there for 2 years. If they're the legacy people, have them have a beer with the newer person and talk about the company. We're right now approaching it at several different levels. We're also involved in, we have a culture team, and you know, our growth has been so crazy for so long that we finally, in the last few years, finally stopped and looked in the mirror and kind of started to focus on ourselves and look inward. So, you know, that's something that for the onboarding process is real key. And, you know, not just slam people with a day long, here's what the company's all about, here it is, now get to work. Have more of a process where you're continually onboarding and mentorship as it goes through, you know, maybe even a year down the line. You know, you keep kind of having to hammer these things and keep working on it.
We've built an internal website just for our employees, and it has all of our history. Obviously, with Carl Strauss himself, there's a big history there. So it's really good to see people see the videos about Carl, see Carl in those videos, and learn about his history. It also gives us a platform to keep people engaged by doing little one-minute, right? It's called Have a Beer With, and you sit with the – I haven't done it yet because I'm still – but you sit there and you just have a beer and say, this is the beer I'm having, this is something special about me, and I nominate someone else, and that kind of brings everybody together, keeps everybody, you know, it lets me understand who one of our accounting people are, or one of our HR people, or sales people. Keeps everybody engaged. It kind of a fun way to keep, you know, the videos and the history and what everybody does and their job titles all in one spot. So that's what we've done for, you know, company culture. We obviously have a big company culture, so it's a big part of who we are. So,
yeah. Three things that we do at New Belgium. One is we have a monthly podcast, and in that podcast we'll like go and grab someone and interview them. And so when you're like working that night shift, you can listen to someone that you don't work with and their experiences at New Belgium, which I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny when I first heard it, but now I'm totally addicted to listening to those things, which is awesome. Once a year, we get everybody in the company together, and we bring people from all different backgrounds to share some of their experiences. And then the third thing that we have is we have a committee that is it is nominated by employees, and it is for employees to kind of address some of the culture perpetuation challenges that we face because the company has grown a lot.
I think we've got time for one more quick question. We've got a couple minutes left. Sorry if anybody had a question and doesn't get a chance to get it answered, but go ahead.
Jordan Foss, I own Steel and Oak Brewing Company. We're in Vancouver, Canada. We'll do close to 4,000 barrels this year. We've only been open for a year and a half now. And so, you know, we started with a very small team and became a bit of a family. Now we're obviously adding people very quickly. And I just wanted to know if each of you, you guys have a very, you know, different company culture from each other. And I want to know, as you grow fast, how do you kind of still keep that collective family feeling that your employees are part of something that's just bigger than just making beer?
Yeah, I think, as I previously mentioned, you know, the I think you need to focus on it. I mean, it becomes a need as you get bigger, too. And if you don't do it and don't pay attention to it, you're going to lose people. And I think you have to commit time and resources, which is money, to that process and understand that, you know, culture is everything. And you're going to use culture as a decision on hiring and firing people as well. They have to fit in with your culture. So I think the biggest thing is to commit time and resources. You know, take it seriously. It is everything, and you need to focus on it.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the communication part that I think we've all touched on throughout this. Even if you don't have the resources to build a website or do a big culture thing, just communicating with that, with your staff, with your people, having beers with them, constant communication of how your culture and where you want to see your team be in the future, I think is good enough to start. And then when you can get into some of the other things that we talked about, it'd be great to continue that culture going on. I just think, and I agree with Jeremy, it is important. It's part of the business. It's absolutely part of the business. It keeps people engaged. It keeps you proud of your product. It keeps you proud of your company.
Go ahead.
Just very briefly, for sure. I'm sure a lot of you guys in this room sit there and look at yourselves and say, what is the thing that differentiates us from all the rest of the people that I'm working in this room with? And it is culture. Like, it comes down to it every single day. So talking about it frequently, engaging people all the time, standing up for it, and when you see great examples of your culture in action at your workplace, to recognize that and to make sure that people see it, you know, as part of a living, vibrant thing.
Thank you, guys. Okay, I want to thank everybody who asked great questions. We're at our time limit. I know all of us up here are happy to answer any other questions you might have individually, and if you want to reach out, feel free to do so. And thanks. I hope this was valuable.
Thanks, man. That was awesome.
Thank you. That was really great. Good night.